Hey, this is Larry H. Russell here, featured columnist at CLNS Radio and executive producer of the number one Boston Celtics podcast on the web, Celtics Beat. And now, author. That's right, author. My debut book, Fall of the Boston Celtics, How Bad Luck, Bad Decisions Brought the Mighty Celtics Empire to Its Knees and Ushered in the Dark Ages, has already been called the definitive account of the infamous doldrum period in Celtics history. You think the Celtics are struggling now? Well, you got quite a short memory. Get the inside story from executives, general managers, staffs, players, media, fans, you name it, as I take you through a time in which how the Boston Celtics fell from the shining city on the hill and became entrenched in purgatory. And you'll see why. That's Fall of the Boston Celtics, available on clnsradio.com on January 5th. And you can't wait for the release? Well, tweet the hashtag Fall of the Boston Celtics to me, at CLNS_LHR. That's hashtag Fall the Boston Celtics at CLNS_LHR. And we'll pick one lucky follower and hand out a free copy on the January 4th episode of Celtics Beat. And now, on to your regularly scheduled programming.
Welcome to the Boston Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com.
Off the turnover, Rondo reverse, plants it in.
Fans, this is your destination for interactive Celtics coverage all season long.
Kelly still has time, takes it.
So what are you waiting for? We want to hear from you. Dial in at 347-215-7771.
Green out of the corner, got another one.
Now let's get it started.
Happy 2015 Celtics fans. Welcome into CLNS Radio's post-game coverage, Celtics and the Charlotte Hornets. Well, it didn't start off too pretty for the Celtics, but the Celtics, the second unit fought hard, never gave up in this one, but ultimately lose to the Charlotte Hornets, who were minus Lance Stephenson and Al Jefferson tonight by a score of 104-91. I'm your host for the evening, Sean Backe. Joining me tonight will be Rich Conti. And, of course, Cal Lee will have you covered over in social media as well. Check out our virtual sports pub, clnsradio.com/sportspub, to chat live with fellow fans. And, of course, get in queue when we open up the call lines at 347-215-7771. Be sure to like our Facebook page by going to clnsradio.com/Facebook, as well as follow us on Twitter at clnsradio. And don't forget to use our season-long hashtag on board. And also, because it's a new year, we have big plans for this year on CLNS Radio, and we'd like to hear from our fans. So please go to clnsradio.com/survey, choose the CLNS Radio survey, and let us know what you think about what we're doing here. I'm going to bring on Rich Conti. And Rich, like I said, the Celtics struggled early in this one, shot, I believe it was 32%. In the first quarter and really struggled in the first half. But I really like the effort that they put out in the second half and were able to come back a little bit in this game. Not enough, but you got to give them kudos for the effort at least, right?
Well, yeah, it was a pretty forgettable game for most of the game. It seemed like for a while there, the biggest story was the Zeller versus Zeller matchup, which turned out to be basically a TKO as Cody went off for a career high 20 points with against his brother with his parents in the stands. And then, yeah, the fourth quarter, Celtics, you know, with the reserve unit in there and actually kind of deep into the reserve unit there. We had a James Young sighting tonight, which a lot of folks got excited about. Phil Pressey got a lot of minutes there, extended minutes with Jameer Nelson, of course, missing the game again tonight. And they made it a game for a while there. They cut the lead down to 6 points and turned the Celtics, the fans, the crowd there at the Garden from a little bit of booing earlier in the game to a little bit of excitement. But, you know, in the end, it was another near double-digit loss to, you know, an 11-24 team in Charlotte coming in without two of their best players in Al Jefferson, you know, unquestionably their best player, and Lance Stephenson, who's probably one of their two or three best players. And so it's going to be a rough rest of the season now, it looks like. And I know Brad Stevens came up in the media last week or over the weekend and mentioned that, you know, he's really coaching to win every game out there, and he's approaching every game as if they have a chance to win. But that's starting to sound a little bit like lip service, particularly when he's trotting out lineups out there that seem to have very little rhyme or reason to them. And, you know, particularly one thing that kind of stood out, you had Cody Zeller going for, you know, 14 points in the first half, and yet the first half there was not a single Brandon Wright sighting, and Wright's a guy who at least physically matches up with Zeller, and you'd think Stevens might have gone to that a little bit sooner.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously they started off struggling. They couldn't hit the shot. You know, Kemba Walker lit them up. You know, he had over 30 points tonight, as I'm trying to refresh the box score here and get the exact numbers. But regardless, it was a special night at the TD Garden. It always is when they do the Seats for Soldiers, which they do every year at the TD Garden. So season ticket holders and other people can donate their tickets to a soldier. You know, Comcast Sportsnet in New England, you know, they always have a couple of soldiers on during the broadcast as well, which is great. So even though it was a loss, 104-95 to the Charlotte Hornets, still was a special night down at the TD Garden. And we should hear from Jared Weiss a little bit later from the TD Garden. We'll get his reaction to that. Obviously, just the environment in the Garden tonight, even in a losing effort. But I definitely think the effort at least is there. I like what you say about Brad Stevens, it being lip service now. And I think at this point, Celtics fans are pretty frustrated with the results here. But I think we can applaud the effort in this case, as they did. They didn't give up. They were down by, 16, 18 points in this game, Rich.
Yep.
And they could have very easily packed it in. Yeah, they could have very easily packed it in this one, but they didn't. They fought back, and it was that second unit again. And like you said, even deeper into the bench, you know, guys like James Young. I mean, this guy's been on the 95 turnpike more than even I have. And I drove down to Florida and back in the last week. But this guy's been back and forth to Maine, and he's taken it all in stride, and he's done really well in the D League with the Maine Red Claws. And I think, you know, he was out to prove something tonight, and he was able to do that. I don't know how much of him that you've seen, but is this somewhat of a coming out party for him, where he can actually stick around with the big club, shall we say, for a little while, and maybe make a little bit of an impact, even though likely this team isn't really going anywhere?
Yeah, you know, I would expect him, you know, particularly if they're, you know, the goal is development over the rest of the balance of this season, I would expect him to get more minutes. You know, it'd be nice to see him do it in a meaningful situation at least once. Yeah. So, you know, maybe folks should pump the brakes a little bit, but you know, I think he came in as advertised, right? You know, we know he can shoot, we know he can score the ball, you know, he showed that's what how he was built even coming into Kentucky as a freshman last year there. And so, you know, his ability to shoot the ball from range didn't surprise me. You know, the question with him is going to be, can he play NBA defense? Can he rebound at least a little? You know, can he learn plays and learn to, you know, to score within the framework of an offense against a defense that's gearing up for him? So, you know, it's nice that he's getting minutes, you know, but I think folks need to keep things a little bit into perspective, not to be a killjoy, but you know, he's still got a long way to go. And
absolutely.
The challenge I worry about is, you know, folks like to talk a lot about playing the kids and, well, you know, if you're not going to win, you might as well put them out in the court and let them develop. But, you know, the two concerns I have with that is I'm not sure how much development you actually do when you're playing out there without a lot of accountability, without a lot of real responsibility, and you're getting your teeth kicked in, right? You know, I don't know that you necessarily learn and really develop the things you need to do to be a winning player, you know, in that situation. And, you know, with a guy like Young, who, you know, again, the issue isn't his ability to score the basketball. We know he can do that. You know, if he gets minutes in the name of development and goes out and puts up some empty offensive numbers, has some big offensive nights, but, you know, he's given back as many points on the defensive end. He's not rebounding. He's getting his points just by you know, breaking plays and running outside the offense. Well, what happens down the road when, you know, his ego becomes inflated and he can point to a box score and say, well, look, you I had a couple of games here where I threw 20 points. I'm not the problem. I'm doing what I need to do, and maybe starts to tune out a coaching staff. So, that's when folks talk about tanking and folks talk about, playing the kids and developing, I worry about that a little bit, because I think there's this assumption that the players just kind of organically develop by getting minutes out in the court. And I'm not sure it really works that way. I think there needs to be team structure, and the Celtics organization, it's credit. They're trying to maintain that with bringing in a coach like Stevens. But at the same time, it's hard to do. And it's interesting that, if you step back and look at it, there's definitely some excitement in the building tonight when they cut that 22-point lead down to 6. Mm-hmm. But I find it interesting that the folks are getting more excited about, a comeback from 22 down against a bad team in Charlotte than they were getting excited when the team was building 20-point leads earlier in the season against good teams, only to lose that, to end up losing the lead. So it's funny how perspectives change, but, people like to romanticize the notion of playing the kids, but, at some point it gets old when you're dropping double digit losses every night.
Yeah. And for me, it's been tough to watch the last few games anyway, particularly since the Rondo trade, because I've been away and, they did have the one nationally televised game. And of course, where I was didn't have NBA TV to be able to watch it. But, I was impressed with the defensive, pressure that they put on the Hornets. And we'll get back into the Celtics in a little while here. I see, a couple callers getting in queue, so you can give us a call and give us your thoughts on tonight's game, 347-215-7771. I do want to take a look at some of the stats from tonight's game, particularly looking at the Hornets. We talked about Kemba Walker. I mean, this guy is obviously, becoming an up-and-coming star in this league. Goes for 33 points tonight on 12 of 26 shooting. And 5 rebounds and 5 assists as well. But he was having his way with the Celtics, getting into the paint, penetrating, finding the open man, particularly Zeller, because he had 20 points on his 8 of 8 shooting and had 7 rebounds as well. And, you had guys like Biombo who were filling in, and, even Kid Gilchrist who chipped in with 6 points and 7 rebounds. So for an 11-24 team, they have some talent on their squad. What did you see, what do you see from the stats from the Hornets here that lead you to believe that, they're building towards something as well? Because obviously, Charlotte, the franchise itself, has been in the doldrums the last several years, never really, made too much of an impact, although they've had some opportunities in the last couple of years, even without Al Jefferson and Lance Stephenson, they beat a lowly Celtics team. But, are there inklings of growth on their side after this victory tonight?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously some pieces there, particularly when they have their full lineup. I mean, Boston fans are, of course, very familiar with Professor Al Jefferson working his magic on the low post. And, he's got his limitations defensively, but he's a fun player to watch. And he showed in the playoffs last year he can be effective, in really meaningful situations. And you mentioned Walker. Walker had a stretch in the first half where he struggled shooting the ball a little bit, but the Celtics really had no answer for him, even when he was missing shots. He was getting whatever shot he wanted. And you say, as you said, he's so tough to stay in front of and corral in the lane. He opens up things for other folks. And it was funny, like Walker to Cody Zeller looked a little bit like Rondo to Tyler Zeller early in the season where, the Zeller brother was kind of feasting off of the easy opportunities created for him by his guard there. And Zeller's a kind of an energy guy, and like his brother is a nice touch around the basket. And, if he gets opportunities, can convert them at a pretty efficient clip. Gerald Henderson, had a relatively quiet game, 13 points, did have 8 assists. He's a guy I've always really liked. I thought he would have been a nice piece, during the Celtics Big Three era if they could have somehow got their hands on him.
He's got the right name to be in the Celtics organization, that's for sure.
He certainly does. Well, I remember his dad's famous steal in 84.
They actually played a flashback of it tonight. As they usually do, when they play Charlotte. They did play that on CSN and E tonight.
yeah, such a seminal moment in Celtics history. Yep. And Celtics fans will always have a soft spot for the name Gerald Henderson in their hearts. But, you know, he actually, you know, I was surprised at the Lance Stephenson move more than anything, because, you know, it would relegate Henderson to the bench. And I thought he was always one of those kind of like underrated glue guys for them. And, you know, all in all, I think some of what they've been able to do last year and at times when they've played well this year is they kind of show the value you get out of continuity, right? Just getting some guys who, where the pieces kind of fit, even if none of the individuals are superstars, and getting some time on the court together and experience playing together can go a decent ways with that in the NBA. And I think that's really Charlotte's strength, is they have guys that play within themselves and know their roles and you know, are comfortable playing that. I know Stevenson struggled to fit in a little bit there. But you know, that's a team, if they can right themselves, certainly can make a run at that last couple of playoff spots in what's a really weak Eastern Conference.
Well, looking over on the Celtics side, Jared Sullinger led the way, 22 points, had 8 rebounds, and on 8 of 16 shooting, you know, missed a couple of bunnies late in the game that might have got him a little bit closer, but ultimately it didn't matter. We talked about Young. He had 13 points, and Jay Crowder, obviously come over in the Rajon Rondo deal, had 13 points and 5 rebounds off the bench. He's been making some decent contributions. A lot of people think he can be you know, a pretty good role player for this team going forward once they, you know, figure out what they're going to do now that they've traded away Rajon Rondo and they have all these pieces. So he may be something to look at down the line as a role player. But a lot of players struggled or were invisible tonight, particularly in the first half. Namely, Jeff Green, 3 of 13 shooting for him, only 7 points, only had 1 rebound, no assist. He was virtually invisible the whole night tonight. And here's the inconsistent Jeff Green coming out again, Rich. I've talked about it, you know, when hosting this show or being an analyst on this show, about the inconsistency of Jeff Green, and particularly with Rajon Rondo gone now, I think people naturally would look to him to be the scorer, the leader of this team, and he really isn't. And, you know, I think maybe he just doesn't have that in his makeup. But talk about Jeff Green, you know, and his struggles tonight in particular. And, you know, obviously I'm sure he hears the trade rumors because him and Bass seem to be on the block now and the next to go out the door. So is this affecting him or is this just one of his, you know, inconsistent nights throughout the season?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of things. He had 7 points right out of the gate tonight, and then after the first 4 or 5 minutes, completely disappeared, as you said, and struggled to shoot the ball, struggled to really make any kind of contribution. He had 1 rebound, no assists, no steals, no blocks out there. And, yeah, you know, I think it's a combination of things. One, I think the trade of Rondo further miscasts him. We know he's not a leading man. We know he doesn't thrive in situations where he's the focal point of an offense. And, you know, even when he is able to put up some numbers there, you know, you just kind of look at the way it happens. And you know, I think I might have said this on the last postgame show I did. Like, it'll be too soon if I ever see him do his, you know, let me take 3 dribbles backwards so I can try to get a running start and take the ball to the basket move, which seems to become his go-to move lately. And, you know, so I think, you know, taking on the greater burden and not having Rondo around to not only, you know, take some of that vocal leadership, attention away from him, but also to just get him, you know, the ball on the move, right? You know, right now, without Rondo, they really have no functional point guard. You know, Turner, you know, when he's played well as a caretaker, handle the ball, don't turn it over, make the easy pass, and use your mid-range game to score some points and you know, get and open things up from other folks. But, you know, he's not going to manipulate a defense and dissect a defense like Rondo does and recognize how to get a guy like another guy like Jeff Green going in the spots where he needs the ball. And that's not a knock on Evan Turner. He's not Rajon Rondo, you know. And I also think, you know, you hit it on the head when you talk about the trade rumors. I think that those have to be affecting him. We know he's kind of a little bit of an introverted, introspective, pensive kind of guy, and he's got to be thinking about it when he's out on the court, and I think it's kind of showing in the results right now.
Well, we'll get back to talking about the Celtics and in this game tonight and the performances. But I do want to open up the call lines here at 347-215-7771. We've had a couple people waiting patiently, so let's go out to the 717. Welcome to the CLNS Radio Celtics postgame show. You got Sean Backe and Rich Conte here. What do you got for us tonight?
Hey, it's Mike in Pittsburgh. What's up, guys?
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Mike. Good to hear from you.
Hey. Yeah, good to be on. Sean, Rich, you know, I first of all, before I say anything, I'd like to thank you guys. Thanks, CLNS Radio, for putting a show on after every Celtics game. I mean, it's easy to put on a show when they're competing for a championship every year. They're in the playoffs. They're in the NBA championship. But I appreciate that, coming on, putting a quality show on when we're going through seasons like we are now. I know it can't be as easy. There's a certain momentum, a certain energy, you know, when a team's playing really good and competing for titles. But I just, first of all, would like to say thank you for putting a game on, a show on every night, even after performances like tonight.
Hey, you're welcome. Are you still there, Mike?
Mike? Well, I think we lost him there. Call back in, Mike. And yeah, we'll get him back in. But thank you, Mike, for the kind words. Obviously, we obviously appreciate that. I know you do as well, Rich. And it's not easy when the team is struggling like this. And obviously, we're dedicated to bring coverage of the team, win or lose, and obviously being a forum for the fans to vent their frustrations about the team here.
Yeah,
so give us a call back, Mike. We'll bring him right back on if he calls in.
Yeah, I'd say it's a testament to the fans that, you know, they're still interested in talking about the team even when things aren't going great. So, you know, it's nice to have callers like Mike who appreciate that and more importantly are willing to call in and participate.
Yeah, well, it seems like he's back on here, so we'll bring him on here. Mike, we lost you for a second there, but as I was saying, I appreciate the kind words. What do you got for us on tonight's game?
Well, I do appreciate that. A lot of people really do, guys. What I wanted to get into is, you know, to me it's the Bass, you know, Jeff Green, Evan Turner. At this point where the Celtics are, you know, it really doesn't matter to me because, you know, I foresee once the rebuild is over or in the process, those guys aren't going to be big factors. But my issue, and especially like tonight, you know, you got Zeller, you got Olynyk, and you know, you got Bradley, combined 11 points. These guys are the players that actually are part of the rebuild, and it seems like every time, you know, you start to buy into one of these guys like Olynyk, you know, for a couple games, or Bradley, you know, Zeller, then they come out and they do this for a couple games. That's the most frustrating thing to me. The guys that are counted on part of this rebuild having these games tonight. And, you know, like I said, the Greens and the Basses, you know, at this point it doesn't even really matter to me what they do because, you know, the writing's on the wall with them anyway.
Well, I mean, that's what playing the kids looks like, Mike. You know, they're young players, they're inexperienced players. And, you know, I found it interesting when, you know, fans, particularly last year, it seemed to be a little bit more common, but, you know, we're almost, you know, upset when the team would win a game, you know, the whole tanking concept. You know, it's something that's nice to talk about in theory, but it's not a lot of fun to watch because, you know, the NBA eats its young. You know, it's a man's league, and these guys aren't ready to play on a consistent basis and be effective on a consistent basis. And, you know, I'm beginning to wonder too how much of this roster that we're seeing now is actually going to be around in two or three seasons. And I'm even including guys like Bradley and Olynyk and Sullinger and heck, even guys like Smart. You know, I think I have a hard time seeing this organization really committing to an approach of, hey, you know what, we've got some young players we think might be good. We've got a bunch of picks. Let's just go draft a bunch of players and wait for them to develop, and then we'll have, you know, this deep stable of young, talented players. I think they want to win sooner than that, and that the challenge is going to be not making the, you know, not making moves just to make the sake of moves, but being able to build a team of complementary pieces. I could see Ainge undertaking a program using some of these players and some and all these picks that he has to almost completely turn over the roster in the next two off seasons. It wouldn't surprise me to see that happen. And in some ways, it makes sense, right? Because one of the challenges of losing a lot of games, going through these transition periods, or, you know, heaven forbid, tanking, is, you know, it affects the development of those young players you do have on the roster. So, you know, you may have to almost treat them as being disposable in that sense. And I almost start to wonder if the Rondo trade kind of signaled that, as Ainge saying, well, you know what, let me just set myself up with as much flexibility as I can possibly get to turn over this roster completely in the next two or 3 years.
Well, let me ask you guys something. There was actually, speaking of tanking or turning over the roster, the Knicks just made a trade tonight where they dumped J.R. Smith and Shumpert for absolutely nothing. Now, we're talking about tanking. Is it right or wrong in the NBA? But it looks like Phil Jackson's pulling off an old hanky move here over in Philadelphia, and those two teams are deliberately putting a D-League roster out there, whatever you want to call it, to take advantage of the system the NBA is having. Those teams are in our division. And, you know, I will kind of want your thoughts. Do you think the Celtics are kind of getting outmaneuvered here by Phil Jackson and Hinkie to the point, you know, they're going to get one of those bigs like Okafor from Duke or, you know, Towns from Kentucky? And do you think it's getting to the point that it's ridiculous what's going on here in the NBA? Because, you know, after getting rid of J.R. Smith and Shumpert, and Carmelo Anthony maybe out the rest of the year, what kind of roster does the Knicks have now?
Yeah, that's a great point, Mike. And, you know, obviously the question came up earlier this week about Carmelo Anthony and whether or not they would shut him down for the season. Now, I mean, if they weren't quote-unquote tanking before, they certainly do it now. You know, they have one of the worst records in the league. They're fighting with Philly for that. This is a clear move by the Knicks organization to completely turn over their roster. And, you know, obviously Cleveland gets a couple of great players. You know, Shumpert, I think, you know, a change of scenery is going to be good for him. Good play with. Obviously could be a streaky shooter, but when he's on, he's on. And then he's going to be a good complement to that if they can figure out their chemistry in Cleveland. You know, I mean, maybe the NBA needs to take a look at this. You know, Rich can probably give us some good insight into that, as he's usually got his finger on the pulse of those things. But from my perspective, you know, you look at some of the proposed deals that have gone on in this league, and even deals that have been turned down, like the one that would have sent Chris Paul to the Celtics a couple years ago, that was, or to the Lakers rather, that was squashed. You know, when it was rumored he might be coming to Boston, you know, the league stepped in and made it known that that they wouldn't let that go through, him to the Lakers, and then he ends up going to the Clippers. So, Rich, I don't know if you have anything further on that, but, you know, it's definitely something interesting to look at, because it's clear right now they're going for that top pick, whether it's, you know, whether it's Okafor or somebody else.
Yeah, I mean, they were kind of heading in that direction even before the
trade. Yeah, they probably could have done it with the roster they have now.
Yeah, I mean, I think more than anything, it was a salary dump. Yeah, they sent out some salary, and they got back guys. They're waiving immediately. They're going to waive Samuel D'Alembert. You know, I think Phil kind of recognizes it's a lost season there. It's thrown in the towel. I would say in the New York case, I don't think the goal is so much tanking. In other words, maximizing losses to get a higher pick. I think it's just to clear the dead wood from what, you know, from a roster.
And they have that plenty of it.
It was basically full of deadwood. And so, you know, I kind of commend him for doing that. And I think that's very different than what Hinkie in Philadelphia is doing, which is, you know, kind of the more classic tank. And, you know, I don't know that the league, if the league has to do something about it, it's more from the standpoint of, you know what, they're paying fans on both sides of the fence, for Philadelphia or New York and for the opponents they're playing, that are paying to see NBA quality product, and they're not getting it. And so from that standpoint, if I were the league, I'd be wanting to discourage this as much as I can. From a competitive standpoint, I don't know that there's anything to discourage, because honestly, tanking doesn't work, right? there's few and far, if any, examples of a team really successfully employing that strategy. And if you just, look at it on the surface, folks say, well, yeah, it's better to be terrible in the NBA. If you're not going to be great, being stuck in the middle, you get stuck there forever. But I don't know that the reality really kind of bears that out. And if you look a little bit deeper and so say that the Sixers or the Knicks, you win only 10 games this season, and somehow the ping pong ball still bounced their way, setting aside the fact that it's a lottery, and they pick a Jahlil before they get a Karl Towns. What then, right? You're bringing what's in this case, increasingly a 19, 20-year-old kid into a dysfunctional environment, and expecting him to develop into a player. And if you're fortunate enough that he does develop, you know what's going to happen. You haven't put a team around him. He's gonna leave the first chance he gets. So it feels like a real fool's errand to say, well, the best way to get the only way to get this top talent is to pick at the top of the draft. A, we know that's not true. And B, yeah, you're drafting that top talent, but you're not able to keep them. I mean, we've seen it time and time again.
Rich, if I could just jump in real quick. The one thing, I agree with most everything you're saying. The one thing I do disagree is I don't think you can say it's not working yet for Hinkie, because I think you have to wait about 3 years to determine in Philadelphia if his tanking, because he's never really gone to the level. He's taken it down, this tanking, to a whole different level, I think, than we've ever seen in the NBA. And I think to say it's not working, you're going to have to wait about 3 years in Philly once Embiid's there, once the Saric, the guy from overseas, their number one draft pick this year, to say that losing sets up a bad culture, because there's going to be a lot of talent on that team in 3 years. So I just would kind of hold, in my opinion, hold off judgment to say it's not working, at least in Philadelphia, for another couple years.
Oh, completely agree with that. But there's ample evidence that it doesn't work in those cases. Or even if you just look, and even where you didn't have tanking involved, you can think, oh, well, Cleveland got LeBron James and in the draft. And, so that's, example of why, if you're able to tank, you should. But it's not really, because, eventually, because they brought him into the environment they did, he eventually left and went on to win his title somewhere else. And so, there's plenty of stories like that. So yeah, it could work out for Philly and Hinkie, but just looking at where they're at right now, do you see an impact player on that roster right now? Somebody you can say for sure, there's guys who have potential, but there's nobody who's really shown, anything even, approaching, a likelihood that they might be a true impact player.
Mike, getting back to your earlier point, which I think was a good one, back to the Celtics, especially in tonight's game, looking at what Turner and Bradley did, or more that they didn't do. I mean, just those two alone, never mind Zeller, which you mentioned, they only had 12 shots between the two of them, and both of them struggled. And as I talked about with Rich earlier, before you came on the line, we're looking at Jeff Green to be a leader with Rajon Rondo gone. But Evan Turner's been in this league a while. Avery Bradley's been here a few years now, although he's still pretty young. These are guys that can, take this on their shoulders together, maybe not, individually, and have only one person have to lead this team. But, a couple of these veterans that can take the lead on this. But when you have a couple of guys that are starters on your team in Turner and Bradley that are 2-for-5 and 2-for-7 shooting and have 5 points and 4 rebounds and only play 20 minutes because, in the fourth quarter when they're starting to come back, it's Smart and Young and some of these other guys that, Sullinger was in there, that and Pressey, obviously, that were making the impact defensively to be able to get them back in this game. It's not always going to be these guys, Green, Turner, or Bradley, that's going to be able to put them over the top and get them victories. But I think more often than not, it needs to be these guys. And I'm seeing so much inconsistency from them. That's why the losses are piling up for the Celtics here, because they're not getting consistent play from the guys who should be leading them, not only offensively, but defensively as well. But, you know, like I said earlier to lead off the show, I did appreciate the effort that I saw for the second unit and deeper into the bench tonight. Mike, anything else for us before we move on and let you go?
No, just to follow up on that comment, and that's all I'll have is, you know, Turner for me, Sean, he is what he is. You know, so I don't really have a problem with he's actually exceeded my expectations a little bit this year. Mm-hmm. But I'm very disappointed in Bradley. I was one of his biggest supporters when he first came in the league. You know, mm-hmm. I was calling for him to start over Ray Allen when he was here. And, you know, if he's not going to bring it on the offensive end, you know, bring back that suffocating defense that we saw his first couple years in the league. And I think he got his contract. He considers himself a scorer now. And like we see in the NBA a lot, the players kind of lose their hunger on the defensive end. I think, Rich, you said something about the young guys, like Young, just because he puts up 20 points, you see improvement, which really you don't, because, you know, somebody has to score, someone has to be out there, and you're not progressing. And I think Avery Bradley at this point is kind of stalled out, and his defense is definitely not what it was his first couple years. But, guys, thanks for the time, and if you could just keep me on the line so I could listen in.
Absolutely, Mike. Appreciate the call and the support of the network. As always, good to hear from you. Mike called 347-215-7771. He also pressed 1 to let us know that he wanted to come on the air with us, so you could do the same and get in queue. Great points from Mike there. You know, obviously, on the rumor trade, I don't know if that's been finalized yet. I know there was speculation about that as the game was ending tonight before we came on the air. So you know, we could talk to Jared Weiss about that as well when he comes on with us a little while, directly from the TD Garden. And Rich, before we move on here, you know, obviously we've had some big news on CLNS Radio. Larry H. Russell has released his first book. The book releases today. Have you had a chance to read it yet?
I have. Yeah, I was fortunate enough to get an advanced copy, and I've actually got a post coming out on clnsradio.com on Wednesday.
It's
kind of a companion piece to what's a phenomenal book. Highly encourage folks, you know, especially anybody who kind of lived through that period of Celtics history.
And I did.
And we'll never forget. Yeah, never forget it. And you know, Larry does a great job of really getting into depth with, you know, an argument that I've made. You know, you hear a lot of folks talking about, particularly fans of other teams, you know, after the 2008 championship, saying, oh, well, you got your championship, you're going to go back to 22 years of irrelevance. And, you know, I think people lose sight of just the number of factors that were involved in that 22-year drought for the Celtics. You had, you know, not only absentee ownership with thanks Dad Gaston, as Dan Shaughnessy called him. You had you know, management and coaching staff that weren't aligned. And Larry really sheds a ton of really insightful and inside information onto some of the situations behind the scenes there. And of course, then you had two potential Hall of Fame talents die. So, you know, unless you're worried that all of those circumstances are going to happen again, I wouldn't bet on, you know, the Celtics going another 22 years between championships.
Well, we'll wait patiently for your review or your comments on this book coming out on Wednesday on clnsradio.com. But the wait is over. One of Boston basketball's most astute historians, Larry H. Russell, dives into this lost era of Celtics basketball with his author debut. The title of the book is Fall of the Boston Celtics, How Bad Luck, Bad Decisions Brought the Mighty Celtics Empire to Its Knees and Ushered in the Dark Ages. It contains exclusive interviews from not only management, but also players, media, and fans alike. It's available today. Go to clnsradio.com. And also, you can win a free copy of the book by tweeting at Larry at CLNS underscore LHR with the hashtag Fall of the Boston Celtics, and he's going to give away a copy to one lucky follower. So definitely check out Larry's book. I've been away myself, Rich, down in Florida, obviously spending some time with the family for the holidays and hanging around in shorts and flip-flops every day for a week, which was fun, and then coming back to what is going to be sub-zero temperatures in the Boston area later this week. But that will give me time to stay warm inside the house and read the book, because I'm definitely looking forward to it. You know, obviously I was young after the championship years of the 80s. You know, so really I was in my teenage years during the 90s, and, you know, obviously I do remember Reggie Lewis passing away, and, you know, I do remember the Rick Pitino years, and, you know, Purvis Ellison getting a huge contract for absolutely no reason whatsoever. And, you know, Dino Roger and the like, but, certainly Larry's perspective on it is always great. So I'm looking forward to reading that. Definitely check that out on clnsradio.com. And also, you know, we're going to have some great reviews of the book and accoutrement to the release of this book from some of our contributors, including Rich as well. So give us a call that we could talk more about this game tonight, 347-215-7771. Again, Jared Boyce is going to call in a little while from the TD Garden to break this one down and give us some thoughts from the team and Brad Stevens on this one. And, you know, also, was a, as I said earlier, it was a great night down at the TD Garden with the Seats for Soldiers, which the Celtics do every year. And also, Rich, they paid tribute, I heard, to Stuart Scott, who passed away, unfortunately, yeah, on Sunday morning to cancer. And interestingly enough, Brian Langford and I host a podcast on CLNS Radio, The Evening Score, and we record our podcast on Sunday mornings, and the news happened to break while we were recording. So when our show is released tomorrow, we actually have our live reaction on the air, which was obviously a tough news to hear following, you know, I mean, this is a guy that I grew up watching on SportsCenter. So, you know, like we said during that recording, he didn't lose his battle. You know, he fought all the way to the end, and you know, obviously our thoughts and prayers go to his family. You know, he's a great guy to follow along with, even through his battle with cancer, because you know, he was always positive and never gave up. So you know, rest in peace to Stuart Scott, and the Celtics were great to honor him tonight. And his alma mater, North Carolina, also did the same. They had a patch on their uniforms tonight for Stu, which I thought was great as well, Rich.
Yeah, I thought that was a great story. Obviously, very sad news over the weekend. You know, Stuart Scott's probably one of, you know, probably 2, 3, 4 names that probably come to mind first when you think about ESPN and its long history. And, you know, really sad to see him go. And, you know, as you said, he never really hid from it. You know, he kind of kept in the public light and shared his struggle with the general public. And I think, you know, folks really got to see the courage and the resilience and just, you know, like you said, the fight in him, and just kind of sad to see it come to this end.
Yeah, and you know, you never really know the impact that you make until, you know, unfortunately it's too late. And now you see all his colleagues and his former colleagues and his friends, you know, giving their thoughts on their friend. And, you know, even the professional players that he covered, Kobe Bryant was one. I know, you know, even Doc Rivers and Derek Fisher and all these guys were giving their thoughts on Stuart Scott. And, you know, it was great to hear, you know, all these great things that they had to say about him. And, you know, it's unfortunate that that it had to come to that. But, you know, it was a nice touch by the Celtics to honor them. And, you know, obviously they're an organization that that usually handles those situations with quite a bit of class. And they certainly did that again down there at the TD Garden. So, yeah, check out the Evening Score Sports podcast. You know, it was kind of a moment that I think caught us both off guard, you know, kind of a real moment. We both gave our thoughts, you know, our personal thoughts on cancer in general and also on Stuart Scott. Both of us, obviously, big fans of him. So stay tuned for that on CLNS Radio as well. Again, 347-215-7771 to talk about this one tonight. Celtics drop a game to the Charlotte Hornets 104-95. And now they go on the road, Rich. So, you know, doesn't get any easier for them as their schedule, you know, sends them out on the road for the next week. You know, I did talk about this earlier, and maybe you could shed some more light on it. Obviously, there was some positive that could be taken out of this game. You know, you saw some great things with them being able to come back. Ultimately, it wasn't enough. But, you know, Pressey had some good minutes. Smart had some good minutes. Obviously, Young had some good minutes. You know, can they take that and move forward as they go on the road here? I mean, what can they take from that, you know, when they have to face teams like the Nets in Brooklyn and the Pacers in Indiana, and in particular the Toronto Raptors in Toronto coming up this weekend? You know, what can they take away from this game that can help them in the next three that are on the road against some tough competition?
Yeah, honestly, you know, you hit on it when you talked about the effort. Given where this team is at, I think, you know, we're going to have to reset expectations and measure success in some really basic ways. And those are, you know, can the coaching staff and head coach Brad Stevens keep them out there giving that type of effort and keep them on the same page and not reverting to individual agendas, right? And then beyond that, enjoy those glimpses and those moments where a guy like James Young shows what he can do offensively, or you know, a guy like Kelly Olynyk might have a big night, or Marcus Smart with his defense, and you know, just enjoy those kind of little episodes as they happen, but really, you know, keep sight on the most important thing is right now, given their situation, can you keep guys with the program, giving that effort, playing for each other instead of playing for themselves? I think that's how we're going to have to measure success. And the other thing is to look at the opponents and look at what you can take from your opponent. I think Toronto is a classic study there. You know, earlier in the show, we talking in relation to Charlotte about the value of continuity and the value of having guys who might not be individual superstars, but whose talents fit together and complement each other. And I think Toronto is a great study in that. I mean, certainly Kyle Lowry is a tremendously talented player, but you know, it's not like he walked onto the scene in the NBA as an impact player. DeMar DeRozan's another guy, again, a ton of talent, but didn't kind of walk in and make a huge splash in the NBA. But I mean, you know, both of those guys are now in environments on teams where there's structure around them. There's pieces that complement their games, and individually they're able to do things that they do well, and they have got teammates that have their back for the things they don't do well. And I think, you know, in the NBA today, so much attention is placed on the importance of having one of those top five or top 10 NBA players if you want to compete. And I think, you know, we lose sight of some of the beauty of the game, which you see in a team like Toronto, you see in a team like the Spurs, where, yeah, certainly Tim Duncan is a Hall of Famer, but while he's still a very effective player, he's no longer, you know, capital T, capital D, Tim Duncan, right? And yet that team can still churn out 60 win seasons. Why? Because they play as a team, and it's less about the reliance on individual superstars. And to me, that's the beauty of the game. And so, you know, hopefully there's, you know, while these guys are young, they can kind of see that, you know, that in their opponents and maybe realize, you know what, if we focus on continuing to play for each other instead of playing for ourselves, if we really, you know, think and learn what it is we do well at an NBA level and what our teammates need from us, and focus on contributing to that, well, then maybe we can have some success like some of these other teams.
Well, we're going to get a reaction from Jared Weiss. He just texted me. He's going to be calling in about a minute or so. So while we're talking about Jared, CLNS Radio is the best of written, spoken, and watched sports coverage. So for the best of our AV, turn to CLNS Radio's YouTube channel. Go to youtube.com/CLNS Radio. You'll get high-definition locker room interviews, full-length locker room interviews, and, of course, the Garden Report, our HD post-game show shot right on the parquet floor at the TD Garden. Subscribe today, youtube.com/CLNS Radio. I like watching it on my smart TV myself, so I could see Jared and Jimmy Toscano and Julian Edlow nice and big on my 47-inch TV. So I don't have to watch on the little screen or my phone. I can watch it nice and big in you know, surround sound, and a great medium to watch it in. And obviously you can do it too if you have a smart TV. So Jared's going to call in a minute, and we're going to get his breakdown of this game, getting back to that. One thing I want to talk about, and we'll probably have to wrap this around our talk with Jared, Rich, but, you know, obviously having been kind of out of the loop the last couple of weeks, but, you know, basically right after the Rajon Rondo trade happened, I haven't been able to give my thoughts on it. Obviously, it wasn't shocking to me. It wasn't unexpected. For a while there, I did sort of hold Danny Ainge to his word that he wasn't shopping Rajon Rondo, and maybe that was naive of me to think that way, that he was actually going to build around Rondo instead of using him to get pieces to rebuild this team. But I think it was a foregone conclusion coming into the season that it was extremely possible that Rajon Rondo was going to be traded. And of course, my co-host Brian Langford has been saying all along that that Rajon Rondo should be traded. My feeling is now, obviously this is not going to be explained to me directly by Danny Ainge or many other people, but I want to know what the end game is now. I want to know why he's stockpiling all these picks and what he's going to do with them. Who is the player that he's coveting? Last season it was Kevin Love. Who is it going to be at the end of this season when, there's a few talented free agents that could become available? Is the draft deeper next year than it was this past year that he's looking to actually use a couple of these picks? That's my feeling on it now. Okay, you've done this. You've taken away the only quote-unquote leader that you had left, the only quote-unquote star that you had left. There's no star on this team. So now what?
Yeah, it's funny. We talked to Sean Grandy right before the trade, and we had him on Celtics Beat earlier in the summer. And at that time, he said he didn't expect a Rondo trade during the season. He expected it to get sorted out in the off season. But then when we had him on the couple of days before the trade, he said his feeling had changed. Now, obviously, at that point, he had some inside insight into the fact that a trade was impending, and honestly, when you talk about what changed, I think what changed is I think maybe Ainge overestimated the team's ability to compete this year with Rondo in the lineup. And I think he maybe sees an opportunity at this trade deadline actually to maybe make a move and bring somebody in. I don't have any, specific information, but if you, put some pieces together and look at a guy like out in Phoenix, like Goran Dragic, who's got a chance to be a free agent at the end of the season, is the type of dynamic offensive point guard that I think, Ainge would like to build around. Phoenix has that log jam in the backcourt, and, the other two guys, Bledsoe and Thomas, are signed to long-term deals. And, you look at, one of the big chips that Ainge acquired in the trade wasn't so much any of the players, although I like Brandon Wright, I like Jay Crowder. It's that $13 million trade exception, which also happens to be exactly what Goran Dragic's salary is right now. So, I wonder, and given the timing of the trade, the urgency of the trade being made in December means that the Celtics can use the players that they acquired in that deal in another trade before the deadline. So, I think the Rondo trade is less about saying, we're going long-term rebuild. We're just going to draft a bunch of players. And I think it's actually a signal that he's going to try to just rebuild a roster on the fly via trades and free agency over the next couple of off seasons. Again, if he's got an opportunity to get a big fish like Kevin Love, great. But I don't think he's got a specific guy like that necessarily targeted. I think he's going to look at how can we go out and get the right guys that fit each other and put them and get us back into that 45 to 50 win range, where now you can start being attractive to a big free agent, or you can start playing that kind of property ladder game that Ainge likes to play. I mean, remember, we're talking about a guy who turned, let me make sure I can get this right, Jerry Welsh into Ricky Davis into Wally Zerbiak into Ray Allen. right? And I think that's the type of rebuild that Ainge wants to do. But he realizes it's hard to do that from where he is right now, where he doesn't have mm-hmm. any established talent that anybody's really clamoring for.
Well, we'll get back to this in a second, Rich, because I do think it it bears talking about a little bit further. Right now, we're going to go to Jared Weiss live from the TD Garden. And Jared, before we get into the breakdown of this game, you know, obviously the Celtics have the Seats for Soldiers every year. Just a great program that they do, and it allows some of the soldiers that protect us to have a night just for them and their families to enjoy a Celtics game. What is it like to be in the Garden? I've never been to a game, on one of these nights. What's it like to be in the Garden for one of these games and sort of the praise that we give to the soldiers that are able to attend these games?
I feel like in every one of these games, I'm spending the entire time on my feet cheering and clapping and just being blown away by all the stories that you hear. The Hero Among Us story will always be remarkable. Tonight, it was a mm-hmm. man who helping people, veterans deal with suicide and depression, something that's pretty near and dear to my heart. And you get to see all these incredible people that I know, we have to do the obligatory take a break from basketball to consider the sacrifice they make, but that'll usually be kind of like a hollow thing you'll see on Veterans Day. And then you really see all these people that have served our country come together. You hear about what is happening overseas right now in the Middle East, and you realize what these people had to go through and what they did to protect all of us and to allow us to host Celtics postgame shows on Monday nights. And you feel a great sense of gratitude, and it really puts you in your place in society. It makes you realize how lucky you are. And it's great that the Celtics are able to be a part of this machine in the NBA that is pretty dedicated to honoring those that make the ultimate sacrifice and that do this for us, and allowing us to realize how lucky we are to get to enjoy all the luxuries we do. And it really does really put everything into perspective.
And in another classy moment, and obviously, it was already very emotional in the building, I imagine, but I saw that they did a tribute to Stuart Scott up on the XD board as well. What was the reaction like to that?
Well, it was pretty traumatizing waking up and seeing the news yesterday. I'm 24, so I grew up idolizing Stuart Scott, saying booyah, cool to the other side of the pillow, all that kind mm-hmm. of stuff. I mean, he was one of the reasons, when I really think about it, why I got into the profession that I am in. And Stuart Scott made everything cool. The guy was ultimate in style and class and personality. He's one of the best that's ever done what he does. And I'm happy for him in the fact that he made such a mark on his industry and his profession mm-hmm. that even the president released a statement of condolence, and a very personal and heartfelt statement as well. Wow. I mean, you have to really do something incredible in your field to be in a non-politics related field and still get that kind of warmth and love and respect when you pass. And Stuart Scott was obviously an amazing guy, and everyone that I've ever talked to that's told me stories about meeting him has always talked about how cool he was and how friendly he was. And obviously mm-hmm. you've heard those stories thousands of times over the last 24 hours, but Stuart Scott was as legit as they got. And there's not a lot of people you can say that about when it comes to TV and media and all that kind of stuff and Hollywood and all that. So Stuart Scott was an incredible person, and it's sad that he went, but hopefully, just like Jimmy Valvano, his passing will be beneficial to the rest of the world, as it'll increase funding and attention for the different types of cancer. And Stuart Scott was an incredible guy. I don't think there's not enough time on this show for us to go into how incredible he was and how much he'll be missed by everybody yeah. that loved him.
Well, I mean, the epitome of Stuart Scott, if anybody who hasn't seen the speech that he gave at the ESPYs when receiving the Arthur Ashe Award, I suggest you go watch it and bring a box of tissues with you as well, because it's very emotional, but very poignant and really got his point across. He really did fight to the end, which was, obviously commendable. Jared, to this game tonight, obviously, there was a basketball game. The Celtics came out pretty cold. They struggled in the first half. Rich and I have been talking about it. There was a great effort from mostly the second unit, but even deeper into the bench in the second half and, you know, cut a 22-point lead down to 6 at one point. And, you know, ultimately they didn't get the victory. And, you know, I don't necessarily think, you know, neither does Rich here, as we talked about, that there are moral victories here. But, you know, there was some pretty good effort out there. So what was the, you know, post-game locker room like after this one? You know, anything from any of the players or Stevens? The effort that they gave out there, particularly in the second half.
Tonight turned out to be what seems to be a public turning point for the Celtics, where you had a few pretty very bold statements coming out of the locker room. It started with Brad Stevens saying that he's not doing a good job as a coach and the team is not playing well and it's his fault and he needs to do a better job. And Brad has kind of lightly said things like that before. He's always been one to always take the bullet for his team, much in the way that Doc did. He learned well, apparently. But tonight, there was a certain brevity to the way that he said it, a certain amount of silence in between his sentences. It was the body language, the way he was talking, the cadence. He was someone that really feels like he himself has let himself down and let his team down. And I really don't believe that you can put this even 50% on Brad Stevens, but the fact that he feels that way, I think, speaks a lot to his character and how he coaches basketball. So I'll credit him for that. I'm certainly pretty confident in Brad Stevens' ability that if he's able to get the right team, he could really do something great with that team, especially as he continues to mature as a coach. And he very clearly has over the last year. But what was really fascinating was we went into the locker room and we talked to Jared Solinger, who was just kind of getting lobbed the simple kind of how do you get to play better questions, stuff like that. And as he kind of kept getting those kind of questions, he started to kind of get really specific. And what he said is, I just transcribed it and I'll read it for you. Skipping a few minor sentences here, so it's not perfect. But he said, if you look around this room, everybody had a big impact in college basketball. The natural ability of us as an individual says, let me put the team on my back. Now, as a team, we can't do that. And it's not just one person, it's everybody. Everybody was at one point a focal point in their career. But we need to step outside of ourselves and put the team first. And so the term hero ball was brought up. And he said that you can't play hero ball. We don't have any heroes on this team. And so I asked him if he wants to be a hero for this team down the road. And he told me being a hero makes you a failure. You can't play 1-on-5 at all. As a team, the system is going to spit out who is going to score, whose night it is going to be. You can't be the hero. So Jared Solinger, for all of the concerns about his maturity and stuff like that, which is mostly generally related to his conditioning, he's an incredibly intelligent and well-spoken person. And one of the most well-spoken and intelligent and funny basketball players that I've known in my 4 years covering the team. And the one thing that he hasn't really done for this team is take a leadership role. And I look at what he said tonight, and that looks like someone that he's taking maybe a cue from Gerald Wallace, who did something similar to that last year. And of course, Gerald Wallace isn't really in the position to do that anymore because he doesn't really play anymore. He played some tonight, which was good to see, although James Young, who we'll get to in a second, and boy, am I a James Young fan, and we'll talk about that. But I mean, Solinger is starting to kind of take a leadership role here. His performance isn't matching what he's saying here. And I think he knows that, and everybody knows that. But Jared Solinger is probably the one guy on this team that's good enough, and Jeff Green is the other guy, but I think we've all written off Jeff Green's ability to lead a ball club. But Jared Solinger is the one guy on this team that has the talent and the personality and the work ethic on the court that could be a legitimate leader for this team. And he's showing some really good leadership skills in the way that he's talking. He's a very hard-nosed, dedicated player on the court. His physical conditioning has improved. It's not nearly what it should be, but it has improved. And the way that he was dedicated to developing that three-point shot, no matter how much criticism he took for it, obviously paid off massive dividends. He's only in his third year, and he's already turned himself into a pretty effective three-point shooter. The sky's the limit for how much of a three-point shooter he can become in his career. But I'm looking at tonight as a very important turning point for this team. I still don't expect them to make the playoffs, even though they're very close to making the playoffs. I don't expect them to be a good team at any point this year, but they have the chance to use the second half of the season to put a couple guys in place in this rotation for next season to determine whether or not those are going to be the leaders on this team next year, because there's going to be a lot of major roster upheaval over this summer, and then the roster is going to be completely made over the summer after that. So these guys are using the second half of this year to basically determine whether or not Danny Ainge is going to use next year to try to get rid of them. And Jared Solinger is the guy that's probably the most important person out of this bunch, because Marcus Smart's a rookie, and we got a pretty good picture of what kind of person Marcus Smart is. The big question is he going to learn how to be a good dribble penetrator, and how much is that going to facilitate his passing ability? But Jared Solinger is kind of in this limbo here where he's kind of time for him to take the next step in the second half of the season. And it's probably going to be the number one thing I'm going to be paying attention to over the second half of the season, is how much is Jared Solinger going to take the mantle on this team?
Well, I like hearing that about Sully, and obviously they got a little short road trip coming up, and sometimes those road trips can bring teams together. So maybe following this game and some of those words from Sully that they can put something together here. Now let's get to James Young because you wanted to, obviously, and because he did provide a spark to this team in the second half. You know, he's been on the express back and forth to Portland here, but he certainly, you know, had a telling game tonight. I asked Rich this earlier, so I'll ask you the same thing. What does this mean for James Young going forward? Are we going to see more of him? Is this going to be sort of a breakout game where he can get some minutes in the rotation and make an impact on this team?
Well, just quickly before I answer that, you made a very important point about how they can go on the road trip and get things together. They also could go on the road trip and completely crumble. So,
well, we hope that doesn't happen, but yes, absolutely.
I mean, they're on the brink of collapse right now. And they go on this road trip and they start losing. I mean, things can turn into kind of a pretty disastrous situation there. I mean, they're going to face the Nets, and then they're going to be facing the Pacers there. So those aren't juggernaut teams. Then, of course, the Raptors, who's probably the best team that they're going to be facing on this trip, before they come home to face Anthony Davis is going to shred this team apart. They got to start playing Brandon Wright because they are going to need him to match up against Anthony Davis, because he's the only guy in this roster that matches up. It's actually a really good matchup against Anthony Davis, one of the few guys that's physically comparable to Davis in the league. Now, going to James Young, I have been calling for James Young to get some playing time for weeks and weeks and weeks. And I understood that with Jay Crowder here, that probably wasn't going to happen, because Jay Crowder is a similar player. He's a pretty solid player. But the Celtics, they've been kind of sending Young back and forth between the active roster and Maine. They finally bring him down here and actually make him active. And he played really well. I mean, he was playing solid throughout the game, and then he went absolutely nuts in the second half there. He's raining some threes. He had this one incredible kind of Michael Jordan-like shot where he did the Jumpman logo as he was finishing, kind of getting fouled. I mean, this guy, he's got a ton of talent. And he's going to be a pretty solid player. The question is he going to be in the rotation 2 years from now, or is he going to be in the starting lineup 2 years from now? But there's no question that the talent is there for him to be on this active roster right now. This team is not winning games or they're not competitive enough for them to say that we shouldn't be playing James Young. They got to give him a chance. And I feel bad for Gerald Wallace, because his career is just about done. He's not playing at all here. He'll get a chance to get out of here when his contract runs out, and he might be able to get a little bit of back end of rotation kind of stuff. But James is going to be getting 10 minutes a night at least if Stevens is committed to playing him. And what he saw tonight, it should have been enough for Stevens to think that he should be at least getting into the rotation when the matchup dictates. He was asked, what James Young did tonight, does that put him in the rotation? And what Steven said was that we need to see how Young responds to tonight's game. So we'll see how it goes in the next game. I assume that means that, assuming he doesn't have a terrible practice, which James Young is not known for, he's going to get a chance in the next game, and we'll see how it goes for him.
Rich, what do you got for Jared?
Hey, Jared, like Sean, I found your comments about Jared Solinger really really insightful and agree with you wholeheartedly. This roster is going to see a lot of upheaval. I wouldn't be surprised if opening night in 2017, there's, you know, maybe one or two guys on the current roster at max still around.
Definitely.
And we're going to find a lot. What happens the rest of this season is going to say a lot to who those guys are going to be. And I think you touched on it by saying it's as much about how, you know, the way they, how they approach the game as is about how they play the game and playing for each other. With Sellinger, you know, you mentioned the conditioning. You know, I think over the off season, there was a lot of talk about him kind of remaking his body. And, you know, we always hear the parallels between, you know, Jared Sellinger and Kevin Love. And Love, of course, early in his career kind of remade his body a bit. It looks like Sellinger's conditioning is better, but it still feels like he has a ways to go, you know, if he's ever going to just kind of get the most out of it, the ample skills that he does have. It just seems like when he struggles, it's because he can't even have a, you know, a minimally acceptable level of athleticism against some guys that he can use to then, you know, apply some of the skills he has. Do you think that's going to be a focus for him going forward, is continuing to put in the work in the off season, not just on his skills like the 3-point shooting, but also in maybe transferring some of that weight from his posterior maybe into his upper body?
Well, I mean, you can't take the booty away from someone who's booty, but that's going to be there forever. Yeah, and that's an asset for Jared Sellinger, is that he can move guys out of the way. And there's nothing wrong with being an old-school type of player. He's got to be able to run, though. I mean, this team is being built to be a running team. That's what Brad Stevens wants. I think he's versatile enough in the half-court offense that he fits well, but he's still got to be able to run out there. And his conditioning got to the point where he's now able to at least keep up with the pace of play. Celtics play one of the highest paces in the league. They've been right towards the top of that ever since Stevens got here, and that was a trend that Danny Ainge set in motion by putting Jeff Green in the lineup the last year that Doc was here. But they need Sellinger to continue to develop. You can't just, like, get off the super fat and then begin with that. He has to keep going, going, and going, and going. You look at how it's transformed Marc Gasol and Kevin Love's career. I mean, those are two guys that came in pretty much the same shape when they got into the league. They both developed killer jump shots. They continued to hone their defensive skills, and they became even better and better passers. And they lost the weight, and they got skinny. And both of those guys are really skinny, but they're still crazy powerful. Because once you're big, and you're tall already, but once you're big, you learn how to be powerful. Because power is, as much as it is your actual muscles and all that stuff, a lot of it is how quickly you move, how hard you hit, how aggressive you are, how confident you are in your impact. Because you can, I mean, I used to play football when I was in high school, and I'd go up against guys that were a lot bigger than me, but I would attack them hard. I would pull a swim move early, I'd bull rush them hard. And even though they were bigger than me, I would come at them with more speed, but the impact that I was hitting them with was more powerful than what they were giving back to me. Those guys developed that when they were big, and then they were able to keep that type of intensity as they got thinner, and they added more muscle but lost the fat, so their overall size was smaller, but they learned how to be powerful, and Sellinger has that in them too. So he can continue to get smaller but still know how to be powerful. Mm-hmm. And that's really, really crucial, because when you're able to do that, you're going to be able to spin around guys and get by guys much more quickly. And you're going to be more effective late in the games. And Jared Sellinger, late in games, his effectiveness is mostly stretching the court and then fighting for offensive rebounds. And he's got to be a late – he said – because when I asked him the question about hero ball, it wasn't necessary – I didn't really mean it as, do you want to be a guy that goes 1-on-5? It's when the team needs someone to step up for them and take that shot at the end of the game, or if the system's not working and you need to go to someone in the post-up or stuff like that, do you want to be that guy? I feel like he answered the question maybe differently, interpreted it differently, but he's got to be that guy that they got to be able to post him up when the offense isn't working and they got a minute left and they're down by two.
Now, Jared, go ahead, Rich.
I was going to say, following up on Stevens' comments and kind of taking one for the team, you know, thinking about those comments in light of some of the comments that Rajon Rondo made last week about defense, I think I interpreted Rondo's comments very differently than a lot of folks in the sense that, you know, I almost saw it as a veiled indictment of whether the organization is really trying to actually win games right now versus, you know, just focusing on development. And, you know, I won't say tanking, but, you know, the priorities don't always seem to be winning. And I know Brad's playing the good soldier, but you look at some of the curious rotations sometimes, and you look at a guy like Brandon Wright that you mentioned earlier, you know, if anybody could have matched up with Cody DeZeller and maybe slowed down the Z train there a bit, you know, it would have seemed to have been him, and he didn't make an appearance till the second half. And so, you know, I wonder if, you know, some of these words about him taking responsibility is just kind of part of this program of, you know, we're not going to come out and say it, but we're really not all that interested in winning right now.
Well, I would disagree with the interpretation of Rondo's comments. I think that how it was generally interpreted in the idea that he was not playing defense is how I took it and how most people took it. Probably because I've been saying that, you know, a lot of us have been saying that Rondo hasn't really been trying on defense in a long time. Now, Danny Ainge's interpretation, which was a fair interpretation too, was that Rondo was saying that because Avery Bradley was such a great defender, that he didn't really need to get the difficult matchup. Therefore, he didn't really have to have a difficult time on defense all these years. So you could take it either way, really. One's more cynical than the other. I would say both of them are fair interpretations, but I don't think that Rondo was trying to indict his former team. I don't think Rondo had much of an issue with the way the team was being run. He probably he wanted out of it, but I don't think Rondo's a smart enough, fair enough guy to understand why it was going the way it was. And I'm sure he looked around him in the locker room and he saw that there aren't really the guys here that compared to the teams that we had from 2008 to 2012. Mm-hmm. And we gotta. The team needs to bottom out to get something to get something that you can build upon, because that's how the NBA is structured. So Rondo, I don't think Rondo really did anything wrong. I don't think he said anything wrong, really. It was either he admitted something wrong that he had been doing the entire time, which is how I felt he has been doing, and what I felt he was really saying, even if it was inadvertent, or he was just kind of choosing his words poorly. But either way, there's no question that Rajon Rondo, even though Avery Bradley was taking a lot of the really difficult matchups from him, and Tony Allen also did that while he was here, Rondo still had to play defense. He still had to defend a lot of good players a lot of the time. And the way that he played pick and roll defense compared to early in his career where he was defending the pick and roll unlike anybody else in the league, it got kind of appalling to a degree where he just would try to hit the steal from behind every time, usually half-assed, and then when the guy would get by him, which was about 97% of the time, he would just watch the play and let the rest of the team play 4-on-5 under the guise that he was kind of getting out there to be ahead of the break. But as much as you want to plan for the break, the Celtics were scored on so much every time they had to defend 4-on-5 that obviously the coach did not want him doing that. And that was Rondo's choice.
Jared, before we find out what's coming up on the Garden Report, anything else from tonight's game? And, you know, obviously the reaction after this one, the loss to the Hornets 104-95?
Well, I had a little one-on-one with Cody Zeller, and you'll see that on the Garden Report, so I don't want to give away too much. But we talked about, I guess I'm really just promoting the Garden Report. I'll give you a little taste because one thing that he surprised me was that he said that when he's competing on the court with his brother, he doesn't think about really trying to beat his brother or competing, that it's really just about the team, and he doesn't really take a one-on-one targeting of his brother. However, he freaking wrecked his brother tonight. So whatever he said, it was maybe it's true, but he certainly inadvertently destroyed his brother tonight.
There was even one play where he literally knocked him down, and I can't confirm this, but I'm pretty sure that Tyler had sort of a wry smile on his face or a little bit of a chuckle running back the other way on his court that his brother knocked him down.
No, I saw that too. I think I tweeted at that moment that apparently these guys are rescinding their brothership tonight. So By the way, Twitter went down during the game for a while, which was really bizarre. I guess it's the Dion Waiters trade was so ridiculous that it completely broke Twitter. Terrible time for Twitter to break down. I was getting tweets from Woj, and I was like, oh, my God. It turns out they retweeted like 45 minutes before. So that was pretty freaky. But it looks like the trade is finally figured out. That is a really, really fascinating trade. I still can't believe it Cleveland did it.
But Cleveland we talked about it earlier, too.
Yeah, I mean, Cleveland's taking a big risk on two huge, high-reward, high-risk guys. If they can pull it off, oh, my God, that team is going to be so much better than they were before. Because J.R. Smith is basically the same kind of player as Dion Waiters. And then you add Shumpert to that team. Those guys both thrive there. It's going to be incredible what they're going to do with those guys. They still don't have a Pivot Man, though. So till they could have had Dolembert. I guess they would rather have the free money away from the tax than Dolembert. I mean, it's Dolembert. But unless they get Mozgov from Denver, which is still a possibility, they're in major, major trouble.
Well, we'll keep an eye on Woj's Twitter feed to have this deal finalized and the exact pieces that are involved in it. But yeah, Mike from Pittsburgh called in Jared and was questioning whether or not the league should step in on this deal because the Knicks are clearly tanking now even more than they were before.
Well, didn't the Celtics just trade away their best player for a bunch of bench players? So
I'm with you.
You're allowed to do whatever you want in the NBA. That's
all right. What do we have coming up? What can we expect on the Garden Report aside from obviously Cody Zeller, which you mentioned?
Just quickly, Mike, if you're still listening, the Knicks just want to unload salary. That's all they want to do. They just want to get rid of as much salary as possible and start over fresh. I can't believe they didn't get the first round pick there, but they just want to start over fresh. So whatever they can do to get rid of guys, that's happy for them. So Garden Report, I'll have a one-on-one with Cody Zeller. There were no lights. There weren't really any lights, so it's a little dark, but it's still a fun conversation. You'll enjoy it. The Solinger Presser, we're going to lead off the show with the Solinger Presser. It's a must-watch. I mean, I know I kind of read it very, like, emotionally, like a Morgan Freeman type there, but you have to see from the horse's mouth there or the Sully's mouth there. We'll have more from the Brad Stevens press conference, see how emotional he was, see how blue those eyes were. And then Julian Edlow and I are going to chill back in our chairs with the banners in the background to talk about our favorite eighth men in the league. If you've watched the Garden Report, you know that I have an absolute adoration for the eighth man, and Julian thinks it's hilarious and loves to laugh at me for it. And tonight, I got Crowder and James Young. I got a double eighth man whammy, so I'm going to gush about it all night on the Garden Report.
Fantastic. I can't wait to watch it on my smart TV. 47 inches in all your glory, Jared Weiss, and, of course, Julian as well. No Jimmy Toscano tonight. He had better things to do with his time.
Jimmy's got better things to do. He had a long trip home tonight, so he's going to skip the game. But if you're watching us, make sure you turn HD off so you don't see all the little acne on my forehead that I got to
see. It's all in its LED glory, Jared. I can see every pore. I can see every pore. We're looking forward to it.
Glowing red cheeks of mine that my girlfriend loves so much. Yeah.
Well, we're looking forward to it. As I said to everyone before, subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/CLNSradio. Lots of great work going on with Jared Weiss. And, of course, our producer, Kyle George, down there can't not give him the credit that he so richly deserves for all the hard work that he does down there. And, of course, tonight with Julian as well. So we look forward to it, Jared. Thanks for calling in tonight.
Thanks, guys. And you know what? We just did a half hour on the air. I got to say, that's probably the most fun I've had all year on the
podcast. Excellent.
That was great.
I love it. Rich and I are having fun as well. We thank you very much, and we look forward to watching the Garden Report.
Good night, boys.
Hey, Jared. Thanks
again. All right. Thanks, Jared. Fantastic stuff from Jared Weiss, as always. Him and Kyle really, really worked their butts off down there. I have had the opportunity to go down there with Jared myself and see just how difficult it is to do what he does. And the fact that, you know, someone like me who doesn't have the experience of someone like Kyle George to do what he does, Jared had to do twice the work. So I appreciated it even more. But those guys do a great job, so definitely do them a favor and catch the Garden Report, which should be available when you wake up in the morning. Rich, real quick before we wrap up here, I did want to get back to the conversation we were having prior to Jared's call-in, and you were mentioning, obviously, the trade exception that the Celtics now have because of the trade of Rajon Rondo. And I had a conversation with Calvin Chamberlain about it, right when the trade happened on the post game show. And, you know, As I said, I didn't really get to give my reaction to it that much because it had just happened. So it was still kind of filtering through and, you know, sinking in. But, you know, obviously Calvin mentioned that with all the money coming off the books for the Celtics, you know, that it may not be possible for them to even use the trade exception. You mentioned Dragic in his contract lining up with this. You know, they have a year to use the trade exception. You know, what's the scenario for them to be able to utilize that on somebody like Dragic or somebody else prior to all this money coming off the books? It has to be, you know, within this regular season.
Well, it depends. There's also that period after the season is over and after the draft, but before free agency opens, or I think it'll still have some value as well. Remember, those Celtics players don't technically come off the books until they are, you know, they're either rescinded or they sign mm-hmm. with somebody else. You still have a cap hold counting against you. And so I think, you know, the exception, while it's certainly, you know, more likely that it would have value between now and the trade deadline or just after the season ends before free agency, I think there's still going to be a kind of a period of time in there where they could still, you know, kind of manipulate situations and possibly take advantage of it. But certainly, you know, it's going to functionally expire before a year, only in the sense that, you know, unless they, I mean, there's also the scenario where, you know, they go out and in the off season, they fill up that available cap space with free agents that they sign. And then between now and say next December, a short period in there, in December of next year, it could be valuable again. So, you know, I think, you know, Calvin's generally, you know, thinking in the right direction, but I think there's a little bit more wiggle room than that. But I think you couple the timing of the trade with, you know, the reality around the exception. And I think that, you know, shows that I think Ainge is going to want to be aggressive at this trade deadline coming up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly when I learned that was included in it as well, it was intriguing to me to find out how they could utilize that. Obviously, that was a big piece to the deal. You know, you have some pretty flexible contracts coming back your way with, you know, with Jameer Nelson and mm-hmm. Wright and Crowder. Maybe some serviceable players beyond this year in Crowder and Wright. Obviously, the picks, you know, are going to be later in the rounds. And, you know, the Celtics already have a ton of picks to begin with. So that was the point that was intriguing to me on how they might be able to best utilize that if they can. So good to hear that there is some wiggle room with that. Rich, any final thoughts before we close this one out? We got a couple minutes left here. Obviously, the Celtics, you know, lose this one 104-95. But, you know, as we talked about, you know, an emotional night at the Garden with the Seats for Soldiers, and obviously a little bit of a tribute to Stuart Scott as well, and some great words from Jared Weiss, obviously, on, you know, and his feelings on it. But any final thoughts before we wrap up here?
Yeah, really. I just want to kind of thought it was actually kind of encouraging to hear some of what Jared was saying about Jared Sullinger's press conference, and that, you know, just that's actually a remarkably mature attitude for, you know, a guy of his age, and speaks to his, you know, potential leadership capabilities, but also, you know, to this idea that we were talking about that, you know, the creating a situation where the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. And it's nice to hear Sully kind of thinking along those lines. And I think the jury's still out as to whether he's going to be a part of the future. But I think if he kind of, you know, keeps that perspective in mind, and even more importantly, is going to be able to impress it on other of the young players, I think he will be a big part of the Celtics' future going on. And it's going to be an interesting, you know, remainder of the season. I think for the next week when they go out on the road, just it'd be good to see them, you know, continue to play hard and continue to play together.
Well, I agree with you about Sully. I mean, obviously they do need someone to try and step up here, or like I said earlier, you know, a couple guys to take on that leadership role. And if a guy like Sully could do that, and also try and grow counted on to want the ball and get the ball at the end of games when they need somebody, you know, when they need a hoop or, you know, they need a big play. If he's willing and able to step up and actually have that come to fruition, all the better for him, because I love him fundamentally. You know, I thought they got him, you know, it was a steal that how they got him in the draft. And, you know, whether or not you believe some of the rumors out there that Danny Ainge was, you know, was reports on Sullinger's back, even though he has had surgery on it since then. You know, obviously I like his development. I don't like the three so much, but yeah, definitely good stuff from Jared Sullinger after this game. You know, hopefully they can move forward into some sort of positive direction with this now. Tune in Wednesday night. We'll be back on the air immediately following the Celtics and the Nets from the Barclays Center. Brian Langford and Warren Shaw will, and yours truly will be covering social media. So hit us up on Twitter at CLNS Radio, and of course on Facebook. You can go to clnsradio.com/Facebook to like us there and follow along with the show. And of course, you can call in at 347-215-7771 to give your thoughts after the Celtics play Kevin Garnett and the Brooklyn Nets on Wednesday. Thanks to Mike from Pittsburgh for calling in tonight, and for everyone listening to the show tonight. So for Rich Conte, I'm Sean Backey. Thank you for listening to CLNS Radio's coverage of the Celtics and the Hornets tonight. Again, tune in Wednesday. We'll be right back on the air Wednesday night after that one. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great night.
This has been the Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com. Thanks for listening. The Celtics might not be in action every day, but we are, so stay connected. Follow us on Twitter at CLNS Radio and check out our broadcast schedule for the best weekly sports podcast on the web.